wanna make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them need? A sonorous disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man soul.
Returning to great speeches and interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice, I'm Steve Lerman. Coming up next, India's coal is killing thousands.
I'm Steve Kerwin. India has posted spectacular growth rates over the past decade, but it's been fueled largely by one of the dirtiest energy sources, coal, and there's a price to pay in public health. A recent study in India calculated that last year alone, pollution from burning coal led to between 80,000 and 115,000 premature deaths. Ashish Fernandez is a senior campaigner for Greenpeace who edited the report, and he joins us in the studio now. Welcome to Living on Earth.
Hey, thanks a lot.
So how surprised were you by these numbers?
We were very surprised with these numbers. We didn't think they would be this high, but frankly, we had no idea of how high they would be because this is the first time that anyone has ever done such an exercise. The important things to remember with these numbers is that while it might seem like it's a whole lot higher than what it might be in the US or in Europe, there are a number of reasons for that. One is population density. India is a country of 1.2 billion people. No matter where you go in the country, you will have dense populations. Most of these power plants are located in central India or along the coast, places where you do have dense populations. So that's one. Secondly, the coal has very high ash content. It's 40, 45% ash. Therefore, you're going to have higher particulate emissions. Because of the high ash content, it's low calorific value. So you have to burn a lot more coal to get one unit of electricity. Therefore, again, higher emissions. And lastly, the standards in place in India are either very low or non-existent. So for particulate emission standards, they're really low. For sulfur and nitrous oxides, emission standards just don't exist. We don't have any limits on those. You're talking about really high emissions, and no one knows what the specific plant-by-plant emissions are because there is no daily monitoring.
So how does India's regulations for coal compare to that, say, of the United States and Europe?
India's regulations for coal in terms of emissions are much lower than any other large economy. We've compared them with the US standards, the European standards, Australian standards, and the Chinese standards. And even it's lower than even the Chinese standards. It's lower than the American standards as well. Of course, the US has tightened its standards of late. But even if you look at the particulate emission limits, which is the only limits that India has, they are, I think, maybe about 10 times higher than what is currently permitted in the US.
What exactly are people dying of?
The main killer is basically cardiopulmonary diseases. So it's heart attacks, it's respiratory distress, severe asthma cases, things like that.
The study says that as many as 10,000 children under the age of 5 are dying from this air pollution. What might be killing them?
Well, asthma is extremely common in most urban and semi-urban areas of India now, partly because of coal power emissions, but in general, air pollution and air quality is really low in most big Indian cities. So asthma among children is really, really common.
So how are these health problems felt throughout the country? Is it equally spread, or are there folks who are more affected than others?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Actually, it's not equally spread for a number of reasons. One is, of course, the concentration of where those plants exist. So if you look at a map of India, there's a large number of these power plants located towards the eastern section of the country, in the center, and then in the north. Secondly, you have to take into account wind patterns, and we have the monsoon. So at different times of the year, the wind patterns are different, and the wind patterns take the emissions over different populations. Those plants that are located in less urban areas or not close to big cities are usually surrounded by low-income neighborhoods. And so you have disproportionate impact felt by low-income residents.
Now, the United States is beginning to transition away from coal as a source of electricity generation, but India is undergoing such intense industrialization. What does the future hold for coal in India right now?
It's funny that you say that because you're right. I mean, the Indian government is currently putting all its eggs in coal's basket, if you like. They see coal as being the major delivery mechanism for electricity in India for the next 20, 30, 40 years. That is kind of misplaced. Coal is not really going to be able to deliver India's energy security. And the reason I say that is, one, our reserves in terms of how much coal we actually have left is probably overstated. The fact that Coal India Limited, that's the state-owned coal miner, has missed its production targets for the last 3 years in a row is an indicator of that. We cannot really import large amounts of coal because it's simply too expensive to generate power by importing coal. Most of the coal that we currently import is low-quality coal from Indonesia. I know there's talk in the U.S. of India importing coal from the U.S. coal mines as they shut down, as they stop their domestic supplies. But that's just fool stock, really, because coal from the U.S. is going to be way too expensive for India to afford. Remember, most of the country lives on less than $2 a day. They're not going to be able to afford coal from the U.S. So imports are not really a major option. And that's why you're seeing India currently has a peak power shortage of 10%, 9 or 10%, and that's because coal is not delivering.
How concerned are Indian citizens about the health risks associated with coal-fired power plants?
So coal is really being fought in India on a number of grounds. The mining is being fought by communities who are being displaced by those mines, by environmental groups, because most of the coal is under forests as well. So forests have to be cleared. So there's a lot of opposition from tribal communities as well as from environmental groups. The coal power plants that are being set up are being fought by communities that are being displaced, farming communities, fishing communities, who are having their land taken away. What has not really happened is there hasn't been much opposition on the health ground so far. And that's why this report is actually quite important, because it sets that perspective, say this is not something we can ignore. This is a serious issue. You're talking about thousands of people dying, and it's something that the Indian government really needs to wake up to. Health needs to become an issue, because India is currently continues to plan many thousands of gigawatts of new coal. And at the moment, those plans don't include state-of-the-art pollution control limits. At the very least, any new plants being proposed need to have state-of-the-art pollution control limits. Existing sources need to be regulated properly and monitored, and the old, most inefficient power plants can be phased out right now.
What about alternatives to coal? What's India doing along those lines?
The bright spot, I would say, on the horizon is that India's renewable energy success stories are really coming out. So we still have about 400 million Indians who don't have access to electricity around the clock. They're not connected to the grid. They can't flick on a switch and have light in the night. Decentralized renewable energy is actually much cheaper to get them power, as opposed to extending the grid 100 kilometers to the most remote village. The renewable industry has been growing at a much faster pace over the last 2 or 3 years, both wind and solar now especially. And the Indian government has set fairly ambitious targets for solar for the next 5 years, up to 2017. But in terms of policy incentives, there's probably a lot scope to do a lot more to benefit those two sectors. A combination of renewables, whether it's solar, wind or biomass, that has the potential to actually get power to people who so far have not really got power from the grid.
Ashish Fernandez is a senior campaigner for Greenpeace. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Why are we driven by this desire? We have lust. Lust permeates our soul sometimes. Men, we are so driven by this lust that we have a violent streak that comes along with it. If we can't fuck it, we'll kill it. You know what I'm saying? A nuclear bomb is a man's way of saying, I'm going to fuck up the earth. Yeah! A woman would never make a nuclear bomb. They would never make a weapon that kills you. No, no. They make a weapon that makes you feel bad for a while. Yes. Yes. That's why there should be a woman president. There would never be any wars. Never, never. You know this. It's the truth. There would never be a war. Just every 28 days, some severe negotiations. You know that. Yes. The truth is, you know it is. Because you have that release every 28 days. Your friend comes to town. Yes. It's not a friend. No, no. How many friends want to make you stand on top of the roof with an automatic weapon going, get in the house! Get in the fucking house! What balances out that? There's your heart. There's romance. There's your heart going, what about poetry? What about love? What about flowers? And he's down there going, whatever works, baby, whatever works. Yes, you know what I'm saying. Wouldn't it be nice? Here's your friend. Wouldn't it be nice you can go into a bar sometimes, buy him a drink? Yeah. There'd be a bar up here for you, a little bar down here for him. Go in there, put him on the bar, buy him a low ball. You know what I'm saying? He's down there, he's looking up at you like, how you been, babe? Sorry about last night, I guess I got nervous, fired off a warning shot. What the hell? But if you weren't strangling me so much, I'd have a better chance. Goddamn it, pal, listen to me. I'm sorry about all this stuff, but I ain't going back in there without some protection. You know what I'm saying? There's some damn strange stuff in there, pal. Hell no, I won't go. Hell no, I won't go. What? Wait a minute. Forget what I said. Who the hell's that? I'm going down here and I'll wait for a while. You get her. Try where you're from. I'll go in for ramming speed. Won't you see? Be the only true character witness you could ever have at a divorce trial. Your Honor, I'd like to bring out a character witness right now. I think he has a lot of bearing on the case. Supposed to raise your right hand, tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth. I have a right hand, but I'll give it a shot. Mr. Fallis. On the night of the 15th, what do you remember?
Well, it was light, it was dark, it was light, it was dark, it was light, it was dark.
And we are driven once again to find Miss Wright, or at least Miss Wright now. That special moment to make love. And while you're making love, you feel like a god. And the moment you have an orgasm, you look like goddamn Goofy. Once again, it's nature going, I don't care. Because you're going, yes, 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 you, whoa, whoa. Oh, whoa, whoa. Is this fun or what? Laughter and orgasms are the same thing. It's an incredible release. Basically, it's your mind going, who the fuck cares? Oh, men can't fake an orgasm. Who wants to look that goddamn dumb? Basically, you're there. And once you have an orgasm, you're vulnerable. Your ego is gone. You're there as a vulnerable human being, and then... At that point, the woman's usually going, I'm ready, Harry. It's time. The little vampire is dead for the day. You're gone. Yes, you're gone. And yet, you must now go on with the relationship. You fall in love. You live together. You build a relationship. And eventually, the passion kind of diminishes to the point where eventually you're making love like,
do you realize the garage is open?
Things have changed. No! You can't do it!
Mary McLeod Bethune. Mary McLeod Bethune was an educator, an early civil rights leader remembered for the innovative school she established for black students, and her role as an advisor to President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Born in 1875 to former slaves, Bethune was one of 17 children. She attended school in a one-room schoolhouse and was taken under the wing of the teacher who guided her to higher education. In 1904, Bethune started a school for girls in Daytona, Florida, with six students. Though resources were almost non-existent, Bethune scraped together furniture and materials and sold homemade food goods for money. She also became proficient at raising funds for the school, and by 1910, the school boasted 102 students. Today, the school is known as Bethune-Cookman University, and Mary Bethune served as its president from 1923 until 1942, and then again in 1946 to 1947. In 1932, Bethune worked to elect Franklin D. Roosevelt, and then served as a member of Roosevelt's Black Cabinet, which was established to help decimate Roosevelt's message to the black community, as well as act as a platform for blacks to air their concerns. Mary McLeod Bethune died in Daytona at the age of 79, and today her home is a National Historic Landmark. What does American democracy mean to me? November 23rd, 1939.
Democracy is for me, and for 12 million black Americans, the goal toward which our nation is marching. It is a dream and an idea in whose ultimate realization we have a deep and abiding faith. For me, it is based on Christianity, in which we confidently entrust our destiny as a people. Under God's guidance in this great democracy, we are rising out of the darkness of slavery into the light of freedom. Here, my race has been afforded opportunity to advance from a people 80% illiterate to a people 80% literate, from abject poverty to the ownership and operation of a million farms and 750,000 homes, from total disfranchisement to participation in government, from the status of chattels to recognized contributors to the American culture. As we have been extended a measure of democracy, we have brought to the nation rich gifts. We have helped to build America with our labor, strengthened it with our faith, and enriched it with our song. We have given you Paul Lawrence Dunbar, Booker T. Washington, Marian Anderson, and George Washington Carver. But even these are only the first fruits of a rich harvest, which will be reaped when new and wider fields are opened to us. The democratic doors of equal opportunity have not been opened wide to Negroes. In the Deep South, Negro youth is offered only 1/15 of the educational opportunity of the average American child. The great masses of Negro workers are depressed and unprotected in the lowest levels of agriculture and domestic service, while the black workers in industry are barred from certain unions and generally assigned to the more laborious and poorly paid work. Their housing and living conditions are sordid and unhealthy. They live too often in terror of the lynch mob, are deprived too often of the constitutional right of suffrage, and are humiliated too often by the denial of civil liberties. We do not believe that justice and common decency will allow these conditions to continue. Our faith envisions a fundamental change as mutual respect and understanding between our races come in the path of spiritual awakening. Certainly, there have been times when we may have delayed this mutual understanding by being slow to assume a fuller share of our national responsibility because of the denial of full equality. And yet, We have always been loyal when the ideals of American democracy have been attacked. We have given our blood in its defense, from Christmas addicts on Boston Commons to the battlefields of France. We have fought for the democratic principles of equality under the law, equality of opportunity, equality at the ballot box, for the guarantees of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We have fought to preserve one nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Yes, we have fought for America with all her imperfections, not so much for what she is, but for what we know she can be. Perhaps the greatest battle is before us. The fight for a new America, fearless, free, united, morally rearmed, in which 12 million Negroes, shoulder to shoulder with their fellow Americans, will strive that this nation under God will have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, for the people, and by the people shall not perish from the earth. This dream, this idea, this aspiration, this is what American democracy means to me.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, a long way from home, a long Sometimes I feel like I'm almost done. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost done. Sometimes I'm almost done, and a long, old way from home, a long way.
I die. That's all, folks.